Captain Elena Rivera runs a fire and rescue crew, and she has finally stopped arguing with you. For three conversations, she pushed back. On whether her people even need this, on whether asking for help makes you weak, on whether circles are just a soft word for a meeting. And now she gets it. She believes it in her chest, so she does the thing that should make a keeper nervous. Because it's the real test of everything you've taught her. She leans across and says, "Okay, you've sold me. There's a guy on my crew, Marcus, 26, sharp, alone in a new city, white-knuckling it. I want to help him build a circle. So how? Where does he even start?" And right there, all the philosophy in the world runs out of road. Belief is the easy part. A person standing in front of you, ready, asking how, that's the part most helpers can't answer. Every episode so far has been the why. This one is the how. The actual step-by-step move you walk a real, scared, skeptical human through. This is the episode that turns you from someone who talks about circles into someone who builds them. Before I hand you the move, let me name why you need one. Because most helping, even really loving helping, never builds a single thing. Watch what a good-hearted person usually does when someone like Marcus is struggling. They become Marcus's friend. They check in. They give him rides, lend an ear, show up when it's bad. And that is kind, and it is real. And here's the quiet trap in it. At the end of all that kindness, Marcus has exactly one person, you. You didn't build him a circle. You built him a lifeline that runs through your single phone. And the day you move, or burn out, or just get busy, Marcus is right back at the edge of that dark water, alone. Except now, he's lost the one person too. Loving someone and building their circle are two different jobs, and most of us only ever do the first. A keeper does the second. A keeper's strange, almost backwards goal is to become unnecessary, to set Marcus up so well among other people that he barely needs you at all. That's not coldness. That's the most generous thing you can aim at. And it takes an actual method, because good intentions drift toward just be his friends every single time. So here's the whole method, and book four is almost stubborn about how simple it is, because simple is what survives contact with a real, scared person. Three steps, in order, and the order is the entire trick. Picture Marcus at the edge of that dark water, the far bank lit and full of people, and no way across. You don't carry him over. You lay three stones. Stone one is inventory. You sit with Marcus, and you make a list, out loud, together, of who is already in his life. Not who should be, who is. The cousin he never calls, the old coworker, the neighbor who waves. Almost everyone is holding way more than they think. They'd just never once counted, so it feels like nothing. Stone two is the one ask. You help him make a single, small, specific, real request of one person on that list. Not a speech, not a confession. "Hey, you still run on Saturdays? Mind if I come?" Small enough to say out loud. Stone three is a rhythm. You take whatever that one ask started and you turn it into a thing that repeats. A standing Saturday run. A Sunday call with the cousin. Because a circle is never built from one big, beautiful gesture. It's built from one small thing that keeps happening. Inventory. One ask. A rhythm. Three stones, and your scared person is standing on the far bank. Now let me slow down on each stone, because each one has a way it goes wrong, and a keeper who knows the snags is worth 10 who only know the steps. Start with inventory, because it fails more than you'd think. You sit Marcus down. You say, "Let's list who's already in your life," and Marcus says the thing nearly everyone says, honestly, "Nobody. I've got nobody." And he believes it completely. Here is what you have to understand. That is almost never true, and it is almost always felt. The loneliest people aren't usually surrounded by no one. They're surrounded by people they stopped counting, because counting them would mean reaching, and reaching feels too dangerous. So you don't argue with the feeling, you get specific and patient. Who texted you happy birthday? Who's the last person who made you laugh? Who waves at you in the parking lot? Who would you, in a real pinch, actually call at 2 a.m.? Even if you'd hate to? Slowly, the empty list isn't empty. There's a cousin, a guy from the old job, a neighbor. Marcus doesn't have nobody. He has a handful of warm but faded threads he stopped tending. And the inventory's quiet magic is this. The feeling I have nobody starts to dissolve the second you make him count, because it was never a fact. It was a fog. Stone One's real job isn't the list. It's lifting the fog long enough for him to step onto solid ground. Stone Two is where everyone freezes, including you sometimes, so let's stand right in the middle of the water and get it right. You've cleared the fog. Marcus can see his cousin's name on the list, and now you say, good. Call him. Ask him something small. And Marcus locks up, because here it comes, the oldest fear there is, I don't want to be a burden. Rivera's whole crew is built on that fear, strong, capable people who'd run into a burning building for a stranger but would rather chew glass than ask a friend for a hand. So here is the turn you teach, and it is the most important sentence in this entire guide. A small, real ask is not you taking something from someone, it is you handing them a gift. Sit with that, because it's backwards from how Marcus feels it. People are starving to matter to someone. When you ask a person for a small, real thing, you are telling them, you're the one I trust, you can give me something I actually need. You count. That is a present. We even have old, plain proof of this. People who study how humans warm to each other have noticed, for a very long time, a funny thing. Sometimes nicknamed for an old American printer and statesman who swore by it, when you ask someone for a small favor, they tend to like you more afterward, not less. Doing a little kindness for you makes them feel closer to you. The ask didn't cost you the friendship. The ask deepened it. Now, careful here. This is not a trick to manipulate people into liking you. It's the opposite. It's permission. It frees Marcus from the lie that needing others pushes them away, when the truth is that a real, humble ask is one of the warmest things one person can offer another. You're not teaching him to be needy. You're teaching him to let people in. Now, I want to bring in the smartest objection to all of this. Because if you're a real keeper, you'll meet it constantly, and it deserves a straight answer, not a dismissal. Picture a thoughtful skeptic on Rivera's crew. Call her Dana. And Dana says, this whole thing is just extroverts deciding everyone needs more people. Some of us are fine with two friends and a quiet apartment. You're going to take a guy who's perfectly happy alone and guilt him into forced socializing because you think he's lonely. And honestly, Dana's right to worry. And a careless keeper absolutely does this damage, so let's be precise. Number one, the build is for the person who wants the far bank, not for everyone standing near the water. If Marcus is genuinely content, you don't lay stones. You leave him be, and you do not get to decide his life is too small. The method serves the person's own wish, never your idea of how many friends a human should have. Number two, notice the scale we're actually talking about. We are not turning Marcus into a social butterfly with 40 friends. We're talking about one cousin and a Saturday run. The introvert's nightmare is a crowd. The build is the opposite. It's a couple of deep, low-key, repeating threads, which is exactly what quiet people tend to want anyway. And number three, the real one. The build is never about a quantity of people. It's about not being alone in a crisis. The most introverted person on earth still, someday, gets the call at 2 a.m. The real problem, the breakdown, the loss, and on that night, I'm fine on my own, becomes the loneliest sentence ever spoken. The build isn't social pressure. It's making sure that when the floor drops out, there is at least one stone already laid. So your quiet person isn't standing at the edge of that water completely alone. That's not forcing anyone. That's the opposite of abandonment. So you've cleared the fog, Marcus made the scary ask, and his cousin said, yeah, come run Saturday. Now most helpers celebrate and walk away. And that's the third place it falls apart. Because one Saturday run is a nice afternoon. It is not a circle. Stone 3 is what turns a single warm moment into something that holds. And here's the beautiful part. The rhythm does almost all the work for you. Watch what happens when, come run, Saturdays becomes a standing thing. Week 1, it's awkward and a little forced. Week 3, it's just Saturday. They don't even text to confirm anymore. Week 8, the cousin brings a buddy, and now Marcus knows that guy too. Week 12, somebody's hurt and can't run, so they get coffee instead, and that's the day it stops being a run and becomes a friendship. A rhythm compounds. Every repeat lowers the wall a little. Every repeat adds a chance for the circle to widen on its own, with zero effort from you. This is the deepest reason the order of the stones matters. Inventory finds the people. The ask opens one door, but the rhythm is the only one that keeps building after you're gone. So you teach Marcus to be ruthless about one thing: protect the standing time. Same day, same thing, low stakes, repeat. Don't make it big, make it regular. A circle isn't a thing you assemble, it's a thing you start and then let grow. The way you don't build a tree, you plant one and keep showing up to water it. That's stone 3. And once Marcus is standing on it, he's on the far bank. He's not at the edge of the dark water anymore. He's among people, and the path is laid behind him. All right, now I have to turn this one around on you. The keeper. Because there's a trap in this work that catches the best people, and you need to see it coming. Here it is. Keepers are almost always the well. You're the one who lays stones for everybody else and never once lets anyone lay a stone for you. You're so used to being the helper, the strong one, the one with the method, that you've quietly decided you don't get to need anything. And that is exactly how the most devoted keepers burn out and vanish, alone, at the edge of their own dark water, having built crossings for half the town and none for themselves. So let me ask you what I'd have you ask Marcus. When did you last do your own inventory, actually count who's already there for you? When did you last make a real ask of one of them, instead of being the one always asked? And do you have a single rhythm in your life that someone else holds, where you are not in charge, not leading, just included? Be honest. A lot of keepers can't name one. Here is the thing I most need you to hear. You cannot give from an empty jar forever, and a keeper with no circle of their own isn't a noble exception. They're the next person who disappears. The build isn't only something you do. To people you serve. It's something you have to let happen to you. The best keepers aren't the ones who never need help. They're the ones who let themselves be built, too. Who let someone lay a stone for them. Practice what you're handing out. Cross your own water. So here's your give this week. And it's the one move you'll come back to for the rest of your life as a keeper, so let's make it concrete. Pick one person you serve. Just one. The face that came to mind a minute ago, and lay the first stone with them. You don't have to run all 3 steps this week. You have to start one crossing. Sit down with that one person and do the inventory out loud together. Let's just count who's already in your corners and stay patient through the nobody and watch the fog lift. That's the give. You're not fixing their life, you're handing them back the people they forgot they had. If it's going well, and they're ready, help them shape one small, specific ask, and then, gently, send them off to actually make it. Don't make it for them. The crossing only counts if they take the step. And if you want the bonus that separates good keepers from great ones, lay a stone for yourself, too. Do your own inventory this week. Make one real ask of one person who's already in your corner. Let someone build a little something for you. Because the most generous thing a keeper ever does isn't carrying people across the water. It's handing them the stones so they can cross themselves and then lay stones for the next person long after you're gone. That's the whole job. That's the build. Lay one stone for one person this week. So that's book four, and out of all five, it's the one I'd keep within arm's reach, because it's the only one that's an actual manual. Inventory, count who's already there, and lift the fog of nobody. One ask, teach that a small, real request is a gift, not a burden. A rhythm, turn one warm moment into a thing that repeats, and let it grow on its own. Lay the first stone for one real person, then put the rest of the stones in their hands so they can cross themselves, and lay stones for the next person after that. That's how a circle outlives you. That's how a keeper builds something instead of just being kind. And if part of you, like Rivera, like Marcus, like Dana, is still quietly wondering whether any of this lasts, whether people stay, whether trust really holds when things get hard, good. Bring that with you, because that's the last book and the last episode. Everything we've built so far stands or falls on one thing, trust, and how a keeper earns it the only way it can be earned, by showing up again and again before anyone believes you will. Watched over, as always, by Daisy. I'll see you for the last one.